Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Christmas, everybody. It is December 24th. It's a Friday. This is a bonus podcast. We have gathered once again to talk about a movie. We're talking about Spider-Man No Way Home. You might have heard of it. it's made a couple bucks at the movie theater there at the domestic box office. Taking the number two spot from Avengers Infinity War this afternoon, recording on a Monday? Mm-hmm. Probably. Today's Monday. It is Monday, right?
It is Monday.
Fantastic. Here we are. We're on vacation, but hey, we can't go away for the rest of the year without talking about one of the biggest movies of the year. Not only one of the biggest comic book movies of the year, but one of the biggest movies, period. Spider-Man No Way Home, the third movie in the Homecoming Spider-Man trilogy, the John Wattsiverse, and apparently a whole lot of other stuff, other universes going on in this movie as well. I don't think I need to explain what this movie is. Everybody on the planet knows what's going on with Spider-Man at this point. We will do, just for the sake of it, a non-spoiler general opinions round, and then we will get into whatever we're going to get into. We will give you fair warning, just in case you have not seen the movie yet. If you've not seen the movie, if you can see it safely and you're comfortable with that, I recommend that you go see it. It's pretty cool, and it is it's significant, I think, in a lot of ways. But we will talk about its quality, what we liked, what we didn't like, and all that jazz when we get into it, which is right now. Spider-Man. I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was really good. I thought I was not excited for this movie. Not really. I don't know why. I think the nostalgia factor was maybe just a little too hard for me with this one, and I was really worried that they were going to overpack it or screw it up, or it just wasn't going to live up to people's expectations, and I was just gonna have to hear about it all the time, and I was already exhausted. I was like, ugh, all right, they're gonna do this thing, they're gonna try to get all these characters and push them all into this movie. They couldn't possibly pull it off. I was wrong. I think that they did a very admirable job of taking things from across the Spider-Man film history and making something new and something in parts impactful for the third go around with Tom Holland. Well, I mean, I guess six, but you know what I mean. I think it was a really good finale. I'm excited about where it could take us in the future. And for as much as I thought I knew about this movie, it still surprised me in some ways. And even the things that I did know when they happened, it was still pretty neat. I was like, oh, look at that. There's the thing. Yeah, I have more to say, but I think I'm going to make our way around the room. And we'll see how other people are feeling. Bob, how did you enjoy your time with Spider-Man?
Very much enjoyed it. I went in with very high expectations, and they were met far exceeding what I would have thought in some of those moments that have been discussed elsewhere and even here. at some level, this is the most comic book movie of all, in so many high concepts that Marvel has built to this, as they did with their other movies too, between television shows and glimpses of things. They really, really got to it. If I have quibbles, there's small ones. There is, it could have, as you say, Steve, this might have been a very overstuffed movie, and they did manage to avoid that for the most part, though there is obviously lots of fan service. Mm-hmm. So maybe, as some critics, the few that have said bad things, is sort of, oh, it's only for the fans. No, it's not. It really isn't. They do a decent job of explaining sort of what's going on, and that does add to the runtime a little. Maybe it should be a little shorter. I think my biggest complaint is my ticket doesn't have a hyphen between Spider and Man. That's my real complaint.
Oh, man. Fired.
Yes. Anyway, that's it for me.
I should probably say that Aaron, Joey, and John are also here.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, all right. I guess it's the Steve and Bob show. We're just guests.
I got caught up in the moment, man. I'm sorry.
Clearly.
I'm really tired. This is a bonus podcast. I can't promise anything, but I can promise one thing. I can promise you that Joey is going to tell you his opinion about Spider-Man.
Kind of caught between you and Bob there, because I think I went in trying to temper my expectations, because I think the conversation around this film and the months leading up to it were just so extraordinary in terms of who's going to be in it and what's going to happen and this and that and this and that and that. And as we've talked about on the show previous weeks, I really tried to like temper that and be like, well, you know, if that happens, it'll just be this. And if that, blah, 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 blah. So I went in with that in mind, and it didn't matter, because this movie, like Bob said, met those expectations, exceeded them, and then somehow did move beyond those as well. I think it's an incredible, incredible film. It's a culmination of a lot of different things that we'll get into a little bit later, I'm sure. And Bob, to your point about this movie being for the fans, and that is being critical, I actually think that the movie is for the fans. And at this point, 20 years since, you know, the first Spider-Man movie came out, and if you go even 40 years since 1970 Spider-Man, you know, like Japanese Spider-Man, you know, like I just think that I think that 99% of the people that are going to see this movie have some connection to this character. And this movie, stuffing as much into it as it does, it recognizes that. And I think actually juggles that very, very cleanly, which I'm utterly impressed by. I think it's fantastic. I think that it's for Tom Holland, Zendaya, Jacob Batalon, kind of our core three there, Marissa Tomei, even Jon Favreau as Happy Hogan, just like our core ensemble from these Tom Holland movies, I think have a wonderful arc in this film. And I think it's a wonderful closing to this trilogy of Holland films. And obviously, Steve, as you said, the kind of other three appearances that he had in those Avengers flicks, I think it's a really nice culmination for all of that. And then some, which obviously we'll get into too. I do have one kind of like thing that I'm still thinking about, but obviously it's a big spoiler and we'll get there a little bit later. But I loved it. I think it's an incredible, incredible film. Last thing I'll say is I went with Emily, my fiance, and she, this past week, she I got the ticket and she was like, can you get me a ticket? Because everyone in the world is going to go see this movie, and I don't want to be the only person that doesn't see this movie. So I was like, all right, I'll get your ticket. It's in the front row, because it was the only seats that were available.
Like the front?
The front row. But, you know, it's the recliners, so it's fine. I often
Okay.
I often get seats there too, because if the people are on their phones behind you, you can't see it. So I often sit in the front row. But anyway, that's just a pro tip for all our listeners out there. But you know, so this week we watched all of the we watched Homecoming and Far From Home. She hadn't seen anything. The last MCU movie we watched, because she tried to do the whole rewatch, we got to Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, and she was like, I think I'm done. and she stopped. And then we jumped to Infinity War and Endgame, because she was like, I just need to watch it. So we watched those. But then, so that's like her experience with the MCU. That's how much of a quote unquote fan she is of the Marvel films. And she sat next to me and she was eyes wide, like riveted the whole time. She turned to me several times during the movie and was like, this is the best movie ever. Like, so many things have to happen for this movie to happen, and it's happening. And she's nonstop been talking about it all week. She's got some things that she really loved that I'll bring up in the spoilers too. But if it could get that kind of reaction out of someone who has that connection, that kind of like limited connection to this quote unquote Marvel fandom, whatever, I think that that's a testament to how amazing this movie is.
Yeah. I will say before we get too far into other opinions, I just flat out forget that I did at several points in this movie sit there in awe as to what they had managed to put together. And I do think that some of the performances in this movie were particularly well done. I think that Tom Holland and Zendaya specifically really kind of showed their range and what they can do, particularly Holland in certain regards. And we'll get more into it. I'm going dangerously towards spoilers now. Aaron, why don't you tell us what your experience was with the movie?
I thought, all right, let's do it this way. I thought Holland's performance was, again, amazing. His range and his connection to, I guess, what I perceive as Spider-Man is there. I thought the relationship between the way it played out, the relationship between him and another main character was great. Dr. Strange. I thought that was great. I enjoyed that. I thought the first three quarters of the movie was a disjointed mess.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I did not understand what was happening, and I was kind of waiting for something to come along that was multiversal related and reset it, because, and I'm not saying that to be a naysayer, I'm saying that because I felt as though there were steps that were taken in the first two movies that were undone in this one in order to drive the plot of this movie forward. And it didn't seem to make sense to me. So again, I was waiting for opportunities in the script or in the plot to sort of self-correct those things that never came, for me anyway. And I felt as though this movie was the storyline was a plot of opportunity to get all the big things they wanted to get in that will make it easier for the next movie to be successful. And I felt like that wasn't the best way to end this trilogy, because I don't feel as though it paid off for this trilogy. It was a great setup for what's coming next, as you'll see as you watch through the whole thing. With that regard, so you'll walk in with a crib sheet of sorts, but in terms of wrapping up the story of this Spider-Man, and from a trilogy perspective, I don't think it did that. I don't think it paid enough time, and I don't think it gave it enough attention. I think it told a very interesting story in its parts and pieces, and I will say, yeah, go for that. For the bang, bang, boom, boom, wow factor, I'll definitely say it was there. Go see that. But from a story perspective, I don't think it was the best way to wrap up this experience with Tom Holland creating this Peter Parker. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. All right. I'm sure that we'll dig into that a little bit more in a little bit. John, what did you think of the movie?
I've really enjoyed it, but I get what Aaron is saying, because I felt some of the same feelings. I wasn't super excited to go see this because I didn't know what it was going to be. I had Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3 fears of too much being put into one movie, and there is a lot here. And as it started to unfold, I started to realize what they were doing. And this is really, this is a 3-movie origin story to set things up for what comes next. And I think that's where Aaron is dead on, that this movie, although fulfilling, fun, and a hell of a ride, it really is setting up for what they want to do in their next trilogy. And where I enjoyed it, I can see where it might be a little dissatisfying for somebody who wants a more fulfilling conclusion of what they started in Homecoming. But as a longtime Spider-Man fan, when I started to see the collection and then I saw the direction they were going, and I don't want to get into spoilers yet, but you know, there's a moment here that is classic with some switching going on that had me emotionally, like, just I was weeping in a movie theater on a Friday afternoon, and
Welcome to my life, John.
I'm sitting here going, I hope none of my students are around, because if they look over here and I'm just full on like looking for a Kleenex.
I straight up cried at one point in the movie and then was like actively holding it back for another half hour a little bit later.
Yeah. And I will say though that this movie has some redemptive qualities to poor decisions that were made earlier, and I enjoyed that some of the other Spider-Men, we could say. And I don't want to get too much into it, but I as a general, I really enjoyed it. It's one of the best Spider-Man movies out there. But I can see how by setting up what comes next, it could have left some people unsatisfied.
Okay. So I think that's it for general opinions. We're going to call spoilers now so that we can talk about whatever we want.
Go see it.
Yeah, this is your warning. So 3, 2, 1. Spoiler town. Okay.
Peter 3.
Joey, do you want to kick this off? Go ahead.
I love this movie so much. I want to say that the fact that this movie exists, the fact that Kevin Feige and Marvel and Tom Holland and John Watts and the crew on this and Amy Pascal and those jamokes over at Sony were able to come to a table and say, hey, let's do this movie. And for none of the three parties to be like, F you, we're not doing that movie, I think is like this, like a testament to like brand synergy in a way that, like, because all we hear about, again, I don't want to talk about the distinguished competition, but all we hear about all the time are this like studio meddling and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And it really degrades the quality of the films and it prevents this from happening. It's why, John, you mentioned Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of the reasons why that movie fell apart.
Oh, yeah. They tried to do too much.
Reason why, yeah, it's the reason why Andrew Garfield's third movie never happened in the first place, you know? And other reasons as well, which we won't get into. But, you know, the fact that they were able to kind of like come together and say, let's do this. And it is a crazy task that we have set out in front of us. And then they do it. I think that like that alone blows my mind. And you know, kind of what I was saying before, between Emily and we were sitting there and we were in a full house. There were like 8-year-old kids sitting next to us and the full house of audience that audibly, viscerally reacted to things that were happening in this movie in a way that I haven't heard, like removing the Avengers films, like Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame, and Avengers 2012. I have really never heard in a movie theater, right? I think, you know, to what I was saying before, there are very few people that are not connected to Spider-Man, the films, or the character in some way. And that this movie is able to not only serve all of those folks, but provide resolution, I think, for all of those folks in a meaningful way. The way that it resolves Toby's and resolves Andrew Garfield's and yes, I disagree with Aaron, resolves Tom Holland's storyline as well in these three films, I think is incredible. I really do. I think that there was really no moment in the film where I was like, this is a waste. I didn't think it could have been shorter. I think it was a really well-made, impressive film. My one thing is, did we have to kill Aunt May? But that's
for that moment, yes, I think you did.
And this is going back to Endgame. You did. Too. Yeah. I know, I get it. Emily said the same thing. She was like, he needed that. He needed to know loss, otherwise he wouldn't be Spider-Man.
That's his Uncle Ben moment.
I was like, yeah. I get it. But still, it goes back to Endgame too. When I was like, Tony didn't have to die for this movie. Natasha didn't have to die for this movie. I'm just sick of characters dying. But anyway, I loved it. And there are so many other things that I want to dig in deeper into, but I loved it. I really did.
Can I ask silly question?
20 years. Go ahead.
Is there no Uncle Ben in the Tom Holland? Is he not dead already when we come into his story?
He's never mentioned. I went back and looked it up. He's never mentioned. Marissa Tomei could be a single aunt who took in her nephew
Peter has his suitcase, right? That does have Ben's initials on it.
Yeah, but that could, yeah. But it's never mentioned.
No.
Yeah.
And going back to when she first was introduced, her and Tony are hitting on each other. And then her and Happy's
she actually.
Well, maybe it's been a while.
Yeah. No, I'm saying
it has. They cut a scene where in Homecoming, they cut a scene that explicitly said the suit that he wears to the dance is Ben's old suit. So, I think they've really actively pulled the Uncle Ben kind of character and mythos out of I think deliberately too, because it was just so rehashed.
It's the pearls all over again, but they decided not to do it. Yeah.
Well, you could tell it when Toby brings up his Uncle Ben and there's no real reaction from Tom Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Peter 1. Peter 2, and Peter 2 also but he talks about Gwen. Peter 3 is, he needed that. I know I loved Marissa Tomei. That moment, that's the moment that got me. You needed that moment. This movie,
I was a mess.
This movie had the Sinister Five in it. You know, Sony's been trying to do a Sinister Six movie for years.
They still are.
And they still are when they don't need to, because here we go. And then, when she stood up, I'm like, this isn't going well.
Yeah.
And then it starts clicking. I'm like, oh my God, they're finally doing it.
I was like, they're not going to do it. They're not doing it. They're not doing it. And then she stands up and I'm like, she's good. She's good. And then her hands are moving. And I'm like, it was a roller coaster.
I definitely struggled in those moments, but I didn't trust it worth a damn. Like, I was like, she's putting on a front because she doesn't want him to be scared.
Yeah.
She knows that he needs to be brave right now, but she's going down.
She's a mother.
And then they do that. Oh man. But they do that fake out where she's walking around. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. But the second that she staggered, there was maybe two or three small instances. I only saw the movie once where she's kind of hobbling. And I was like, oh, she's her. Like she's bleeding internally or something.
And her hand never left her side. When her hand doesn't leave her side, it's like, that's not good.
God, I don't know that we're getting away from it anytime soon. But I was devastated during that moment. Like that was when I openly wept in the theater. Yeah. I was so upset in those moments. It was, I think, satisfying. Like I to say that I enjoyed it sounds weird and cruel, but I love that somewhere in that movie, it had a moment like that, that really, really touched me the way that it did. And I just, super quick, the other one that really got to me, because I don't want to forget about it, is the moment where Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man goes down for the save for Zendaya.
Yeah.
And they land on the ground. And when he kind of comes to that realization that he did it this time and that he did manage to save her, that was the other moment where I was just like, I clutched my heart and was just like, oh God, movie.
But that's what I'm saying. And everyone in the theater understood that. I'm crying again thinking about it.
I know.
Everyone in the theater understood that. whether you saw that movie or not, you know, like everyone understood what was happening there. There was such care taken to set those things up if you hadn't seen it. Because Andrew Garfield has a moment where he says, I couldn't save her, you know, and that's really all you needed. But if you had the additional kind of emotional baggage that the Spider-Man movies have created for all of us over the last 20 years, you know, like it's just a little bit more. But I just think that like everyone in the house understands the significance of that, understands the significance of With Great Power, you know, and unlike the previous two films that were kind of riding on the Uncle Ben, Peter moment that everyone was familiar with from the comics, you have seen over two films the relationship between Aunt May and Peter and how much he leans on her and all of that. So going back to the idea of this is a three-film origin story, really a six-film origin story for this character, I think it just creates a new resonance, a new value to these changes to the character. Now, do we need more films? I don't know. We'll talk about that later, but I just go back to, I think it hits.
Well, you think that Uncle Ben moment in both, in, you know, Raimi's Spider-Man and then Garfield's Spider-Man, that's like the end of the first act that sets it up. In both movies, I didn't really feel an emotional connection to either actor character, but over the six movies here, I've really grown to love Marissa Tomei's Aunt May, and then to have that snapped, and I knew it was coming because this is the moment.
How did you know it was coming?
Because
when the explosion happens, you kind of think, could it happen?
In the moment, because, I was like, they're going to kill this, but the whole movie up to it, I was like, they're not going to. She's fine. She's Aunt May, and then obviously she gets literally like rammed like by this pointy like hobgoblin glider.
But I mean, before this movie, and I'm not trying to be like derail anything, but Tom Holland's kind of been Iron Man Jr. He hasn't had any like really emotional. He's been having fun. He's been happy go lucky. His life's been pretty damn good, and that's great. That's not Spider-Man. Spider-Man needs a reason to do what he does.
Someone needs to die.
Yes, in many aspects. That's what Spider-Man,
Well, the other two were created. Him, right? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that that's why I knew it was coming. As soon as they started fighting in that building, I'm like, something bad's gonna happen here because it's been too good up until that point. Mm. So that's where I was coming from.
Indeed. Anybody else want to jump in?
Aaron, are you up or should I?
All of those things are great points that ultimately didn't have to happen because Peter was not supposed to be this stupid three movies in.
Peter is stupid.
He had his moments, but he's learned these things through the first two films and the other Avengers films. He had his death moment. He damn near had a nervous breakdown after Tony Stark. He shaped his whole life and everything he did in this movie to save them. After Tony, this was a movie with all these points shoved in. And remember during those other movies, I did complain that this was more, that those were more of a Iron Man movies. I did complain about those, you know, those more Iron Man movies and Spider-Man movies. However, this movie was a collection of plot points that were shoved together to make you all react exactly like you're reacting right now.
What did not need to happen? This is a movie of a fictional bent. This isn't as if it's a documentary about Peter Parker. Let me clarify why I say it didn't need to happen.
It needed to happen to move the character forward. I agree with all those points that you're saying. He needed to have moments like that to move the character forward. But the reasons they gave for them happening in this movie were not plausible.
Well, what's the reason?
Against the things that he learned.
But he doesn't want to save these people?
He wants to save these people.
I get why he walked into Doctor Strange's office. Into the Sanctum Sanctorum. I get why all that happened. I absolutely get it. And I was on board. But when he couldn't shut up while he was doing that spell and understand after everything he's been through with magic what could happen when the guy is literally telling him to shut up or something bad's going to happen. And then it happens.
Well, he set all that in motion.
Right. And it's also, that's also from, I forget the date and issue.
One
John
day more.
Can tell me. The, yeah, he did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's 16.
I get it, and I know it's 16. All happened in the book that he removed his he made everyone forget. I know it's all canon. All that stuff is canon. It just didn't seem to ring true to me. It was testing my patience all the way through the first quarter, three quarters of this movie. Because I'm like, these things should have happened, but the reasons you're giving for them to happen didn't make sense. Why are you went through this whole thing to get those two back into school, and then the first thing you did was call them to do the exact thing that can get them thrown out of school. And put their lives in danger, knowing this was happening. All of these things just didn't make sense to me. Secondly, inconsistencies in his powers. Doc Ock threw him through bridges, banged him up and down against cement, up and down through a bridge, but then suddenly the goblin can punch him and break a rib?
Okay, well, goblin has superpowers.
I'm sorry, the man with the metal arms that can throw you through a bridge has superpowers apparently as well. He joked about it and walked away like nothing was happening. But the goblin...
Not to be a contrarian here to your contrarianism, but if you want to look at things that way, every superhero movie ever made has got that same problem. Batman's a regular person. He could not take that abuse without having internal injuries. He'd be dead. So would Cap and everybody else. They'd be dead.
Yeah. I too was annoyed at Peter Parker in the Sanctum Sanctorum. I too was. And I think you're supposed to be. Much of that first part of that movie is Peter, stop. Like, stop. You are making things worse. And so much of Homecoming is that, and so much of Far From Home is that too. This Peter, the thing that I've loved about Tom Holland Peter, which actually some fans of other iterations of Spider-Man aren't, is that he's a dumb kid who makes really dumb decisions. And as someone who interacts with 16-year-olds every day, they do not have their best interests at heart, even if they think they do. And I think that is something that I've actually really loved about this version of Tom Holland Spider-Man, that no matter how many times he seems to get it, he still is a 16-year-old kid. And I think what this movie does, talking about resolution for that character, I think this movie turns him into Peter Parker. I like this kind of conceit that we're setting up here. This movie turns him away from Iron Man Jr. into a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But also makes him grow up in a lot of ways and give up the things that keep him connected to that kind of naive, innocent, I'm a kid Spider-Man. Giving up his love. And I think he learns a lot of that from seeing these two other Spider-Men and seeing who they are and seeing what they've lost and realizing that, oh, that's who I have to be, right? These guys are heroes and I have to be a hero too in a way.
Except when he was about to murder the guy that he was trying to save.
Well, he didn't though, and he was about to, and it's Toby that steps in to say, you don't want to do this because it's not you. And I think that is something that you have to earn, right? And I think it is. Like,
but he didn't.
What are you talking about? He did. At the end of that movie, he doesn't kill him.
He doesn't kill him because someone else stopped him.
Because one's in it alone, Aaron. Everyone's in it together. That's what this movie does that the other movies didn't. I did not realize that I needed a Spider-Man who was committed to healing and reconciliation in a way that the previous versions weren't. In the previous versions, people died. And he killed people by accident or otherwise. And this movie, the one thing that they held on to was that Peter isn't going to kill. Peter's going to try to help these people, even at the expense of literal reality, right?
Yeah.
And it's dumb. It is a dumb move. And there are moments in the movie where I'm like, Peter, just shut the hell up and let Dr. Strange fix this. But knowing Peter Parker, he's gonna try, and that's what he had. And in that moment where he almost commits the sin, right? Yeah. He needs to be reminded. And that's a lesson. That's learning. And that's Marvel and Sony being like, he's learned his lesson, and there's a future here.
And I think John's gonna lose his shit if he can't talk soon.
No, I'm with Joey because Toby killed him in the first one, or allowed him to die.
Allowed him to die. A bunch of people.
He knows, but he knows that ramifications. And and Tom listens to him. Peter 3 listens to Peter 1. And that's important to, as a growth, to be the next, you know, the Spider-Man that he needs to be. So you're telling me
that the guy that comes in to murder you in your home grows if the police officer comes and stops him before he does it?
That's hype. You're talking in hypotheticals that are separate from this film. Like, you're like, all of this
he
is
was
not,
going to impale the man.
He was, and he didn't.
And he stopped himself.
He did not stop himself. He was stopped.
When I saw it as when he saw Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, Peter 1, guy can't do this.
Tom Holland.
When Peter he saw Prime. Him, he realized
he let up.
That it,
he let up.
He lets up. Yeah, that's a classic hero motif that you are better than the villain because the villain would kill him.
Even after Green Goblin then stabs Tobey Maguire in the back.
Yes.
He, instead of Tom Holland then killing Green Goblin, he and Andrew Garfield cure him anyway.
So just answer me one question. Had everyone stood back?
Yes.
And not done anything. Mm-hmm. Would the goblin have lived?
No.
Tom Holland
would have killed his ass.
That's what
you think so?
That's all I'm saying.
I think he needed a reminder. But you need a reminder, yeah.
Sometimes you do in those situations.
I thought the reminder
was like, I've been there, man.
But I thought the reminder was whole with great power comes great responsibility.
But he killed his aunt, man.
I get it. But he pissed it all away. He pissed the whole strength of that moment away because that moment really did connect to
him. I disagree.
I think he came back to that moment.
He takes that moment with him the rest of his life. And it's why he's then at the end of the movie, the person he is moving forward in his little apartment, his little Tobey Maguire apartment.
That's why he gives everything up because he has to take responsibility for what he's caused.
He finally grows up. Just like, I mean, and... You know, it's almost like the post-Gwen Stacy issue of, you know, Spider-Man evolves. Mm-hmm. You know, these three movies have really encompassed the Uncle Ben moment and Spider-Man leaving his teenage years behind and moving on to being the hero that he eventually becomes. And it's not the hero everybody wants, but it's, you know, he basically gives up his entire life to try and save other people to make up for all of his mistakes.
What an idiot.
The thing that I connect to with Spider-Man in general is that, yes, he is on the surface when trying to live in the average teenager world, a dumb kid who just doesn't have he's somewhere on the spectrum. He doesn't have the social acumen to exist with other teenagers. But what really clicks with me is that he has the ability and he has this side of his personality who becomes the one who can outsmart supervillains. And I think that for me here in this instance of him was what I was hoping we would get to with these three. And that I was in in the third act, I thought we were getting to, but then it seemed like a lot of that plan that came together eventually was sort of hobbled together. And I really wanted to see, and I kind of said this in my opinion of the second movie when it was all Iron Man centric, was I really wanted to see in the origin of Peter becoming Peter before. I wanted to see the aspect of Peter becoming Peter before he hit the Avengers, because I feel like this version relied so much on his experience with the Avengers and him being a fanboy of sorts and not giving him the opportunity. So where I think this movie really excelled was it packed in his life experiences and gave him the opportunity to have that growth. I feel like maybe if we switch the orders of these three films, I would feel a lot better about this film, because I feel my opinion is that this film removed a lot of the growth that we saw in the other two films. Because if you can't figure out that there is some things you have to do when you nearly watch all of London collapse, I feel like those lessons weren't really demonstrated here. I do feel as though the connection he had to his friends and that loyalty and his desire to protect them was all Peter. I get that. And I was all on board with that. I get that his desire not to kill them was there. And I feel like that was a strong point of the movie and should have existed in the movie. I get that. I don't get the methods that he went about to do it. And I don't get that the methods that were used in the plotting of this movie to get him to those points. I didn't buy them. I get that you all did. I didn't buy them. They didn't connect with me. I just felt like the parts and pieces were there. The path to each one for me didn't feel genuine. It felt forced. And it felt like it sacrificed some things that were learned in the previous films that I kind of relied on to get to this film that weren't accessed for me. And those emotional scenes that you guys are talking about, yeah, they were emotional. I think they were meant to be emotional, and they were great scenes, and they were his versions of all the things that, you know, are required for the hero's journey to exist. And I get it. I just don't know if I felt like they existed in the way that they needed to exist in this film. And then my next thought was, I've already seen Into the Spider-Verse. This is getting very deep into Into the Spider-Verse territories. And then the thing that also threw me away is I don't even know if the Andrew Garfield character seemed off to me. I made a note about that because one of the things that kind of the reason why Andrew Garfield was never really my Spider-Man is because I felt like he was really emo Spider-Man. Mm. And then he even talked in this film about, you know, after things happened with Gwen, about getting very dark and very bitter and very brooding. But he cried half this movie.
Yeah, and was are you sort of did you not have an emo phase, bro?
Answer, no, I didn't.
I cried all the time. I love the Andrew Garfield movies. I'm an Andrew Garfield stan. I think he's freaking awesome. I think I said right after the movie was done, I was like, that Andrew Garfield, what a guy.
he's gonna go far.
I think that something that's interesting about that character in this film, and they kind of acknowledge it in a really kind of tongue-in-cheek way, is the angry, dark Spider-Man that he talks about being, we never got the chance to see.
Yeah.
I think he talks about it as what he did after mm-hmm. Amazing Spider-Man 2. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when he comes into this film, that's one of the things that Tom Holland sees. He sees where the rage can take you in some ways. I think it's what I really loved about this movie is it provides a transformation for the Holland character into whatever this future trilogy is going to be, which quite frankly, I don't think I want or need, for some of the reasons that Aaron's actually pointing out. And I could elaborate in a second, but, I think it provides a transformation for the Tom Holland Spider-Man in a meaningful way. I think it does a little bit of fan service in bringing back Toby, which for many Spider-Man fans, I think people just have a fond memory of those first two films. Mm-hmm. And I think that seeing him and hearing him say it worked out, or hearing him say like, we made it work with MJ or whatever he says in the science lab, which is an adorable, incredible scene when the three of them are doing science together. But also provides a nice kind of arc for Andrew Garfield's Amazing mm-hmm. Spider-Man 2. Not only when Toby is like, you're amazing, say you're amazing, say it, believe in yourself, say it. Which I was like, you are amazing, Andrew, you were great. The people weren't ready. besides that, I think like the Gwen Stacy, Zendaya moment and the moment where he gets to say like, I got angry, like it got heavy and you don't want that. Like I thought that was a really nice mentor moment in a really interesting way. I just go back to, you know, this movie is at once the cap for Tom Holland's origin trilogy, but also a cap for literally 20 years worth of films, and that it's able to do that, I think is incredible. Now, again, do I need a future trilogy? I don't think so. I've already seen Sad Spider-Man in a lonely apartment doing crimes in a homemade suit. It's the Tobey Maguire movies. And if I wanted, I could just go watch those movies again. But I get it. Everyone loves Tom Holland and they want more movies and Sony's not going to give up their cash cow. But, you know, to Aaron's point, Tom Holland's Spider-Man movies were about a kid who was a fanboy who found himself all of a sudden in the shoes of a hero. And this movie in many ways
helps him along that journey and find himself in a meaningful way. I don't know if I need anything after that. Like, I don't like, where does fanboy Avengers fanboy Peter Parker, Spider-Man go from here? I don't know. I guess we'll get another trilogy to show us. But if you're looking at that iteration of Spider-Man, then I think that this is the capper for it. But that's just me.
All right. I've got some talking points here. I made a list. Want to go through some of these?
Yeah, I was up.
All right. Let's talk about Doctor Strange for a minute. Because there were all kinds of theories and suspicions revolving around him, particularly when the trailers were coming out. Everybody thought maybe something was up with him. They thought it was strange that the
house was, that's what was up.
Frozen. Well, yeah, that's the other thing I want to talk about is congratulations to Wong for becoming Sorcerer Supreme.
The pressure, well, Strange was gone for 5 years. Someone's got to do it. And the pressure's off Steven. Now he doesn't have to be so buttoned up.
I loved that moment where Wong revealed that. I was like, yes, that makes perfect sense.
Of course, well, though, why is he now as Sorcerer Supreme out fighting the Abomination in a cage match?
He's got to make some money. He doesn't have that Doctor Strange neurosurgeon.
Okay, could be. All right.
Crusading around the multiverse isn't cheap. Well, I thought that was a cool
multiverse, but we'll come back to that.
All right. Well, whatever. So Doctor Strange, like, there were all these things going around, like, oh, it's gonna, he's gonna, he's Mephisto. Everybody thinks everybody's Mephisto in these Marvel things. But like, I will say that there were definitely points during this movie where I really thought that there was going to be some kind of a heel turn. And he was going to be revealed at one point to be someone else, or he was someone else in disguise the whole time. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. This movie kept that going for me for quite a while. And I was actually a little surprised to find out that, like, it's just Dr. Stephen Strange being Dr. Stephen Strange. And
yeah, he's an asshole.
I know. And that's the other part of it, is this movie really drove that home for me, because he is just – he's such an unpleasant character. And after reading like Strange Academy and diving into some other Doctor Strange stuff throughout the year, like, that's really who he is.
Yeah, it's not inaccurate. Yeah. He's got a huge ego.
It's such, yeah, I know. It's such a weird, I don't know. It was just, and this movie, it really made me dawn on me who he is and what he's about. And I was like, man, you are just an angry dude who's caught up in all this, aren't you?
And he's never played well with others. I mean, look at him in all the Avengers movies and his own movies.
Yeah, but like, he had all these like side eye moments and just kind of like, I don't know, messing around. Like, oh no, it'll be fine. We can do it. It's not a problem. We've used it for less. It's only, you know, the fabric of reality. It's fine.
He's an arrogant neurosurgeon who thinks that he can do no wrong.
I know. I really had to let that sink in for me this movie, though.
Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't want him at my birthday party, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. I also talk about a power move.
Nice, Bob. That was good.
Talk about a meta power move for Marvel to be like, you know, we did a really great job, Sony, making these Spider-Man movies. Really great job. You know what the post-credit scene should be for this Spider-Man movie? Our trailer for our next movie, yeah. Doctor Strange.
Holy F
you, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Did you guys catch the America Chavez with her back turned with the star on her jacket?
I saw something I can't say for sure. I would have sworn that in that phalanx of characters sort of spilling out all over the place, that I saw someone in a blue suit with a ponytail that strikes me as Peggy Carter.
You never knew, maybe. But I just love that power move that they were just like, yeah. Oh. And that's why when that movie ended, I was like, this is Marvel's way to be like, thanks for Spider-Man. Because the way that Peter Parker ends this film, like, the whole Marvel universe has forgotten who he is. That to me felt very meta. Like Marvel being like, thanks for letting us use Spider-Man.
You can take him back now.
Yeah,
that's what it felt like to me. Yeah. Now, I know that things have come out since that, like, oh yeah, we're still working on a new trilogy, blah, blah, blah. But to me, that's what it felt like. And then you have that power move where they're like, hey, you really like Spider-Man? Guess what? We're doing a Doctor Strange movie.
Well, and erase Venom while you're at it.
Yeah.
Bye.
Oh, those poor fans.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you had more talking points.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're on the after credits sequence. Why don't we talk about the Venom stuff for a second? So the mid credit sequence that we get is Eddie Brock in where was he? He was in Mexico.
Cabo San Lucas. Yeah.
And does anybody know who the bartender was? He looked
so Ted Lasso. Football is life.
Oh shit. Danny. Oh my God. I knew it. Okay, good. But so Eddie Brock gets realityed back to his own, but leaves a piece of the Venom suit behind, or the symbiote purposefully stayed behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does this mean that we'll be getting a different Venom and a different Venom actor
Spider-Man
in the 4. MCU?
Oh, it's going to be Spider-Man 4.
Yeah, Spider-Man 4 black suit, gets rid of it. Spider-Man 5, new Venom.
Yeah.
Bring back Topher Grace.
Yes. Why not?
Or I'm sure there's a bumbling, you know, it's decipherable reporter somewhere that looks like Tom Hardy in the MCU someplace. Yeah, but I love that, like Venom, like the Venom fans, the five of you, you know, you saw the post-credit scene of Venom 2 and you were like, "Oh my God, Tom Hardy's going to be in Spider-Man No Way Home." And then they whisked him right back in the post-credit scene. I thought that was incredible.
Of both Venom movies, this is by far my favorite Tom Hardy.
I picked up the Carnage movie the other day. Thank you very much.
I'm going to take my son to this. I think we're going to go over the weekend. And
better go quick, man.
I know, but I can just see him being like, "What's the best part of this movie? Venom was there, Dad. Venom." Like, oh, my God. You got to stop.
Does he know?
No, he does not know.
Okay. Technically, there were six villains in here. You know.
Yeah, there was a Sinister Six.
I love seeing Alfred Molina again and Willem Dafoe. Jamie Foxx gets to play an Electro, you know.
Thomas Hayden Church.
I found out that Thomas Hayden Church and the Rice Ivins, that was all recycled footage.
Yeah, it was.
I think vast portions of Thomas Hayden Church's stuff was as well.
Yeah, it all was. Both of them. I think some of the voice was new. I think they did some new voiceover pieces. But
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How was the, and this might be a theater by theater basis. I've noticed that our theater screens
was not that good for some.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was the movie like particularly dark for you guys?
Could they have the Statue of Liberty fight in the daylight? Could we please?
Yeah.
They couldn't because the CGI.
It was really dark, right?
Yeah.
It was really dark. Yeah. It was hard.
Okay. I'm curious to see if like a 4K presentation when that comes out is going to change anything.
And I was having a hard time telling which Spider-Man was which. I mean, Tom Holland was easy, but I was getting the Garfield and Maguire Spider-Mans when they were in costume. They should have been more. I thought
they're taking their mask off. They're doing their own movies. Why not?
But I thought Garfield had more like silver in it than. Yeah. What this costume did, but oh well.
You could tell when it was a heavy CGI moment because it had to be dark. Like the basement scene, the dungeons, lot it was dark, you know, because they had to cover up some of that blending. Did anybody else
think that the lizard looked kind of bad?
Good. The lizard did you not look
Killer
good.
Croc?
Yeah.
The lizard did not look good. He looked much better.
They hid him. Just this movie, there are aspects of this movie visually, and this was one of the things I was going to bring up with some of the gripes that I have with it, is I think visually it was a little disappointing in spots. It looked a little unfinished to me. Like they really had – like a COVID movie that they really had to cobble together. I think I would like to see another version of it, like an up-resed whatever, when it comes out for home viewing and stuff like that.
Hey, my.
But there were parts of this movie that I just thought it was so dark, and I didn't know if that was our theater or if that's just the way it was directed.
I think that's
just
the movie.
It's probably the house that they sent it to. You know, so many visual effects houses work on these things. You know, but I agree. The lizard, I pegged that too. I was like, ugh, that lizard looks a little
rough.
It looks like straight out of 2011. You know,
Like didn't pull me out of the movie. Is not a I'm not gonna put like a strike against it or anything. I'm just saying, like, with these Marvel movies and these comic book movies, you're used to that polish and this.
But it's
a little tarnished in spots.
I like how they just left him in the van. Yeah. They didn't want to put him in the apartment, so they just because we don't want to do the CGI. He's just in the van.
I also loved that. I thought that the mirror dimension scene looked just as good as it did in Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that's such a cool effect, such a cool thing.
That was cool.
And love that Peter could do the math to figure out how to beat him.
Yeah, I loved the. I thought going back to Jamie Foxx, I think that this Electro and the CG with Electro and the design for Electro, I really enjoyed in this movie. I thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm.
Love when he used his powers. You got the old-fashioned Electro lightning bolt mask.
Yes.
Did anybody
yes.
catch the mistake there? Mm-mm. He didn't know that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, so he should have not been pulled into this universe.
Okay, I saw a video about that, and the person was saying that this the stories, like, they're off in their own world doing their own thing. Like, they continued being Spider-Man in their worlds.
But Garfield introduces himself in this movie.
That's true.
Oh.
And Jamie Foxx is like, I thought you were black.
Yeah, that's a whole Miles Morales nod. You know, he said, I thought you'd be black for all the way you help the underdog.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know. I'll have to watch it again. I will watch it.
I mean, if you get Jamie Foxx, you get Jamie Foxx. So Fox, don't, yeah.
Maybe it was like, A, you know who Spider-Man is, or B, you've been killed by Spider-Man. And either one of those gets you into this universe. Da, 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 da.
But when the whole multiverse was rippling, I like, there's the Rhino. I was like trying to pick out other villains to see who might
Scorpion
show
up. Is in there. Yep. Kraven is in there.
Yeah. Yet another movie where they tease the multiverse, but at the end of it, the multiverse is closed. It happened in Far From Home when Jake Gyllenhaal was gaslighting the entire world to think there was a multiverse. It happened in WandaVision with the boner, right? And obviously in Loki, they're like, oh yeah, all these timelines and what if and blah, blah, blah. But here we are in No Way Home, and they're like, haha, look at multiverse. They're all coming. But then at the end of the movie, they close it, and it's done. So I go back to my theory that all this multiversal shenanigans is just a red herring, and it's not going to be the Marvel cinematic multiverse that everyone thinks it's going to be.
I don't know. I thought what Doctor Strange did might set up the multiverse in his movie.
I've seen people saying that this may lead to Secret Wars.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Oh, gee, the Hickman?
Like, after some time with the whole incursion thing.
They're not going to do incursions.
They're not going to have the... I thought you meant, like, the Beyonder coming up and being like, ha, F you all.
No, the Hickman version with planets coming from all over the place.
Yeah. But then you need Doom. You need Doom before you can do that.
Very true.
I want to mention...
Please bring in the Molecule Man for...
Oh, I love him.
Owen Reese.
I do, too.
So even though it was super rumored, and I think we all kind of knew that it was going to happen, we did get a big crowd reaction when Charlie Cox showed up as Matt Murdock.
Yeah, that was cute.
Oh, so good to see.
It was that was funny one of... Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, it was funny because I could almost hear people in my theater saying... Who is that guy? I'm like, oh, wow.
I know that guy. Yeah. Some folks were like, I know that guy.
Netflix? Netflix?
Was that? Yet another.
Yeah, we had a couple of people down in the front that were hooting and hollering when he came on, particularly when he catches the brick.
One of Aaron's things, though, where it's like, and we're going to just wrap the bow on that storyline. When it's like, okay. Yo, I don't think the charges will stick.
Thank you, Lord, that I wasn't the one who brought that up, because that is at the top of my. I'm not even kidding you. It's at the top of my notes. I'm like, did they just let that white boy off for nothing?
I would have loved like maybe just like a few more sentences where he just explained anything. Why the charges were dropped. Like, oh, you know, you're 16 and he was like, you're a minor, so there's really no way for you to be tried.
It also happened in London. They can't charge him in America for something happens in London.
Those were federal agents, I thought.
They'd have to extradite him back to the United Kingdom.
So I was just like, wait a second, can we just, I swear to you, you literally took the words out of my mouth. My first note here is, why the hell did he get off? Like, I don't even understand it. It's like they got questioned. It looked like they were all trapped by the guy who seemed like who was played a little bit smarter than he probably really was. But
I guess
what? How did you get from that to, yeah, that's probably not going to stick.
Like, what are the charges? Like, what would the charges be?
Murder. Well, I think they were coming at it from vigilantism. Yeah, I think that's what it was. I think that's how they were coming at it. I think the way we believed that it was going to be happening from the previous movie was that, yeah, he was going to be convicted of murder. But I think they made that connect. They sort of made that go away with the connection to the Stark Tech, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe they just couldn't pin it directly to him because there was still some other missing Stark Tech where we know where that actually ended up going. Mm-hmm. But I thought the way that they kept carrying on was like all the crimes he committed while being a vigilante. And that's how they were roping, you know, I'm just going to call him Genki, but you know, Ned into the situation and how they roped Zendaya into the situation. But then it's just like, all right, well, I guess we're done here. Wait, what? There's not even like a probation or a court.
Well, the only person pushing the narrative was Alex Jones. I mean, J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah. And wait, when did J. Jonah become bald in these movies?
He may have always been wearing a toupee.
Oh, Aaron.
J. Jonah Jameson in the Tom Holland verse is bald.
Yes.
I just don't like it. I want the flat top.
Well, I this is kind of what I was saying before. And Steve, I don't know how many other things are on your list, but like...
No, I think I got everything.
But like, when the movie ended, I was like, that was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I really loved what it did for Andrew and Toby and Tom. They had their moments. It's done. He ran off in his holographic suit, you know, made out of shiny, you know, stuff from spandex. Michael's or Joanne's or wherever you got it, spandex. And he zoops over Rockefeller Center and I'm like, off into the sunset. Like, wait a few years. And then you want to do Miles Morales, do like another, do something else. Give me more Into the Spider-Verse. Like, I don't need more of this. I don't need more of this. Like the version that this movie goes down, I think is just going to retread the other two series in a more direct way. These three films, for better or worse, and some folks it resonated with, other folks it didn't, you know, that were looking for a more kind of conventional or Peter that looked like the Peter from the comics and wasn't Iron Man Jr. But for a Avengers fanboy, Iron Man Light, Tom Holland, Spider-Man, like these three movies were awesome. And I really enjoyed them. They fit into this universe. But if you're going to say this is Marvel Universe, forgetting about Tom Holland's Peter Parker, cool. We had our moment. Give us something new. Give us something fresh going forward. I don't know what that is. I'm not in the studio, so it's not my job to. But I worry that this next trilogy of films, we're going to do Venom, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do this, and he's going to be alone in an apartment, and he's going to find a redhead, and they're going to fall in love, and he's going to be emo. And I'm like, we've done all these things before, you know? I worry that this subsequent trilogy now, removed from the Avengers, is going to feel more like a retread than these three did, because these three were pretty much wholly original iteration of the character.
Well, the next movies could easily just go be a Sony project. You don't need him in the MCU anymore, like we were saying earlier. And if this movie was written as a closure, I'm fine with the way this ended, and I don't need another Spider-Man movie in this iteration.
I know where he goes. You know, I know what he's going to do. He's going to go be friendly neighborhood Spider-Man in the spandex. And he's going to be sad and alone until he finds someone to be with, I guess, maybe. But that's not a story that I need.
No.
And I do still have the question of how are they all going to college together if he was gone for 5 years?
They were all zapped.
No, I don't think they were all zapped.
Yeah, Zendaya and Jacob Batalon were zapped, were blipped.
And so it was Flash, because in
Far From Home,
one of the kids who'd been like a little brother was the hot kid who'd grown up. That was the competition for
and Betty Peter Brant was like, I can't believe they made us take our exams again.
Yes, yeah.
So they basically blipped them all.
They blipped all the main characters except Wong.
Yeah. Who's now Sorcerer Supreme.
That's good stuff. Were those the 10 rings he was using at the end of the movie?
No.
Who?
Strange had those 10 rings on.
Maybe in the multiversal movies.
No. From the last scene where he's like,
No. He had the thing that he was using to zap him into the prison.
I specifically made a note.
Did he have rings? Were they rings? He had
5 golden rings on each arm.
Oh, he might. I think that's just the type of magic that he uses. I think there's a thread between the Shang-Chi rings and that type of magic. The Eternals had it too.
I'm telling you, that's the future. None of this multiverse crap. It's a fake. It's a QB sneak. Watch out. It's a
red herring.
Bob knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. The last thing that I have on my list is the three spiders. I will say, when we were talking about this movie and we were saying that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield would be in it, I was convinced that they wouldn't really show up until the climax of the movie, that they would swing in and rescue them and they'd be in it for 5 minutes. I was very taken aback when Ned opened up that portal and we saw Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, and I was like, oh, we're doing this now. Okay. And then they got Toby like almost immediately after that.
Yeah. I was like, we have to wait for that. And they were like, nope, we're going to do it right now.
Yeah. And I was really surprised. I was like, wow, okay, they're going to be in the rest of this movie.
Can I also
say, pretty cool. Go ahead.
During that scene at Ned's house, Ned's great grandma, yeah, speaking Tagalog, speaking Filipino, the 4 little kids next to me, those 8-year-old kids, were also Filipino and started screaming at the screen. Like, no joke. Like she said a line and they like screamed the translation at the screen. And I was like, shh. No, I was just kidding. I didn't tell the shh. But I was like, it warmed my heart. I was like, oh, this is what we mean. Like, this is what we mean when we talk about representation on the screen. Yeah. But what a really wonderful scene.
What about the Tobey Maguire shooting the webs from his wrist?
Yeah.
How does that happen? Can you do it often?
Does it come from anywhere else?
Yeah. Oh, I kind of forgot that I forgot that Tobey Maguire shot it out of his body.
Peter 3.
Oh, good stuff.
I like the old man Spider-Man jokes too, with his back cracking it, doing the chiropractor stuff.
You want me to crack it for you? Oh, can you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. That's all I've got on my list. I mean, unless I think we hit mostly everything, unless somebody wants to bring up something in particular, we could do, you know, final thoughts around the table and then wrap this sucker up.
Are we just going to forget Ned suddenly being magic?
Oh, yeah.
He said talk it was about in that. His family. He said it was in his family.
He said he
maybe
had
maybe
hands.
Strange Academy.
Like, also, yeah, like he was wearing Doctor Strange's brass knuckles, wasn't
he? Stole
like,
him. Yeah, he stole them. That's how he could.
Doesn't
do
that like
opening.
Anybody could open up a portal. I could open a portal with that thing.
No, because Doctor Strange couldn't until he learned how. Right.
You have to be connected to the magic, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Ned's a pretty cool dude. I think he would have a better time
of
it than
Doctor
Strange.
He's the guy in the chair.
Doctor Strange is all arrogant and like.
Jacob Batalon lost a ton of weight, you know, and you could tell because that wig was not doing him any favors and those clothes were too big for him. But good on him. He's been putting a lot of work, that guy.
Now we found out that he's Ned Leeds. He could be the Hobgoblin.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. When he was like, I promise you I will never try to kill you.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I am your best friend, and you won't have to hold me dying in your arms. I was like,
Did you have a bad friend? Hilarious. Best friend? Yes, he died in my arms.
Want to do final thoughts?
Sure.
John, why don't you go first?
No, I just like we've said it. I think it's a really great movie. It's fun for anybody who's been a longtime Spider-Man fan. I think it's great to have like a redemptive ending to the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. I'm not as big a fan as Joey was of those two movies, but I did think that he deserved better than what he got. But go see it. Enjoy.
Absolutely. Aaron, you want to go next?
You really want me?
I mean, anybody can jump in, really. We don't really have to go around the room.
Aaron's still got half a list to go through.
Point 17.
I will be publishing my manifesto later tonight. No, I will say this. Because it is a Marvel movie, because it's a Spider-Man movie, and because it has all the parts and pieces that I think will make everyone go ooh and ah, I definitely say go see it. I think if you're of a school of having a particular Spider-Man that you connect to, this may not, you know, hit for you the way it didn't hit for me. But if you want to see those other parts, all those parts and pieces in there, they're there. Those emotional beats are there. The wow and the bams and the booms are there, and the humor is there. I just think they all connected the way they probably should have, but they're there and they will entertain. So I'd say for that reason, go see it.
All right. Anybody else want to jump in? Bob?
Sure. Why not? For honestly, to me, this movie could have been a real mess with all this stuff in it. And it really isn't. For me, it definitely hit a lot of places. The last act of it was really just very, very emotional as each of our Spider-Men get their chance to shine, get their redemptive moments. So does Otto. Mm-hmm. Where he does the reverse heel turn. We didn't think he's going to get there because, you know, he had died or only remembers his machine, and it turns that around. It was lovely to see that happen too. So I'm really happy that this is as good as it was. I had high expectations. They were exceeded.
Joey, how about you?
Like I said, I went to see this movie with my fiance, who does not give two hoots about, you know, the crap that we ramble about every single week on the show. And we both left jaws on the floor in awe of this film. So if I can see the Marvel movies six times over and do rewatches every year, and she could watch Spider-Man 1 and 2 one time back in 2005, and we can both leave as in awe of it as we were, I think that tells you something about what this movie is able to do and what it's able to provide audiences of all types, from of all ages, with whatever background that you have. Because Spider-Man's a hero, and everyone, you know, everyone's got a connection to that character.
Yeah, I agree. I loved it as well. Definitely felt like I was part of something by going to see it, seeing it with the people that I saw it with. We had a very lively theater, and it had been a while since I was in watching a movie with a bunch of strangers where everybody was kind of reacting to different parts of the movie and screaming their heads off. And even the things that like were wholly predictable, people were just psyched to see it. And like Joey was saying earlier, the studio's playing nice enough to get this done. Maybe not done to perfection, but certainly done in a way that brought a lot of people together. And I like that. I think it's going to make a ton of money, and we're going to get more of these movies, or at least some version of these. I would be excited for someone else to take the helm for the next trilogy, or if they're going to move directors around a lot, I would like to see somebody else's vision when they go back to this character. I don't necessarily want John Watts to continue the franchise. I think it's time for some new blood on that end. But
Miles.
Yeah, like I would love to see that kind of stuff. I'm really excited for Spider-Verse. I just think it's cool that they managed to pull it off as well as they did, and really, really created kind of a cultural moment with this movie. There's been an urgency for people to see this movie and get in on it. And, you know, during a time where it's perhaps still a little dangerous to be going to the theater, a lot of people kind of set that stuff aside for this one to be a part of it. And I find that aspect of it to be fascinating. And, I'll be excited to watch it again when it comes out on home video. Maybe pick out a couple of things that I didn't notice that first time, and cry my ass off all over again when next year when Aunt May dies.
Next year, Fox News is going to blame Spider-Man on the next wave of Rona.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, it's not going to be a part of the award stuff this year because it came in a week or two too late from our recordings. But I wanted to make sure that we got together to talk about it, to give it its due and, you know, give people our opinions on it and whatnot. And I think it was a success. I think it's a great movie. And I'm really glad that people are into it and are enjoying it as much as they are. Everyone except for Aaron.
Which is fine.
I'm okay with that.
Hey, look. It's the way it goes sometimes.
Sometimes people are wrong.
Sometimes a bunch of them are wrong.
We have more.
Sometimes four out of the five, yeah.
Let me see. This is coming out on Friday, so that means that two rounds of the Talking Comics Awards, our nominees, are out by now. We hope that you're enjoying those and listening to those. And we'll have round three coming up the following week. And then we'll see if we can't reconvene for the actual awards, or maybe we'll have a show in between there where we catch up on a couple things. We have Thirsty on Tune actually dropped. If this is Friday, then yesterday, the first episode of that focusing on the webtoon My Gentle Giant with Bronwyn and Chris. We definitely encourage you to go and check that out. It's a brand new show from us and from them, and it is wonderful. I've had the pleasure of listening to it. It's a good time. You'll get to know them. You'll get to check out a cool new book and maybe get opened up to the whole webtoon thing.
Yeah.
That's a good resource.
I have a plug.
Sure.
I want to say how much I enjoyed your YouTube Iron Giant show.
Oh, you watched
it? Yes, I watched it today. It was absolutely amazing. Lots of cool stuff, great clips, great narration. You really nailed it, Steve.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that so much. That's awesome. I just got the rough cut for the January episode last night. I watched it. It's great. It's really coming together. I think that this is going to be something that will be nice to have archived in the YouTube vault. And we've got a lot of really great responses to it. People love the Iron Giant, though. So we'll see what happens when the next one comes out and doesn't meet their expectations, or a hit on a movie that kind of goes one way or the other for people. And then those downvotes and those comments start coming in. So we'll see. But that's the nature of the beast. Thank you for checking it out, Bob. And thank you to anybody else who has gone and checked those out or it out. If you haven't, it's go to the Joe Blow YouTube channel, and it's The Iron Giant Revisited is what you want to look for on YouTube. And I wrote it, I narrate it, and my amazing, amazing video editor, Jasmine Evan Samuels, did all the visuals. She's a tremendous talent out of in film school right now. Very cool. And we're celebrating animated films, some of the best ones, in my opinion. Go and check it out. Thanks. So I think that's it. Now that I've plugged that was, I didn't anticipate that, but thank you, Bob.
I figured you wouldn't, so I would.
Yeah. And I think that's going to do it. Like I said, we got more episodes coming out, things in the new year are happening, and we appreciate that you stop by to talk some Spider-Man with us. Let us know what you thought of the movie. Tweet us at Talking Comics on Twitter. You can also email us podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. Let us know what you think of the awards. Let us know what you've been reading. Catch us up on your stuff. How are you faring in this pandemic? Let us know. That's it. Anybody else want to say anything before we get out of here?
Jonah was right. He's a menace.
All right, we're getting out of here. For Bob,
Merry Christmas.
For Joey,
I'm something of a scientist myself.
For John,
Happy holidays.
For Aaron,
you know what you did.
Whoa.
Goodbye, everybody. Be excellent to each other. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll catch you next time on the Talking Comics podcast. To be continued.